told the United Nations Security Council that Afghanistan faces multiple crises, including humanitarian, economic, climate, hunger, and financial. But who cares? The Western media, the Western politicians, the so-called defenders of human rights? In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media for further details. Stay with us, please. In this regard, Al Jazeera said the UN humanitarian chief has urged donors to restore funding for development in Afghanistan that was frozen by the US, warning that 6 million people were at risk of famine. Martin Griffiths told the United Nations Security Council that Afghanistan faces multiple crises, including humanitarian, economic, climate, hunger, and financial, and that donors should immediately provide $770 million to help Afghans survive the coming cold month. Conflict, poverty, climate shocks, and food insecurity have long been a sad reality in Afghanistan, but said what makes the current situation so critical is the halt to large-scale development aid. Poverty is deepening, the population is still growing, and the de facto authorities have no budget to invest in their own future. It's clear to us that some development support needs to be restarted, Griffiths said. More than half of Afghanistan, 39 million people, need humanitarian help, and 6 million are at risk of famine. More than a million children are estimated to be suffering from the more severe life-threatening form of malnutrition and could die without proper treatment, he said. Griffiths said, $614 million is urgently required to prepare for winter, including repairing and upgrading shelters and providing warm clothes and blankets, and an additional $154 million to organize food and other supplies before the weather restricts access to certain areas. With more than 70% of Afghans living in rural areas, Griffiths warned that if agriculture and livestock production are not protected, millions of lives and livelihoods will be risked, and the country's capacity to produce food imperiled. He said the country's banking and liquidity crisis and the extreme difficulty of international financial transactions must also be tackled. According to Al Jazeera, billions of dollars in Afghan central bank reserves held mainly in the United States have also been frozen by foreign governments. Russia's UN ambassador Vasily Benenzia accused the United States and its allies of abandoning Afghans to face ruin, poverty, terrorism, hunger, and other challenges. Instead of acknowledging their own mistakes and supporting the reconstruction of the destroyed country, he said, they blocked Afghan financial resources and disconnected its central bank from SWIFT, the dominant system for global financial transactions. China's UN ambassador Zhang Jun also accused the US and its allies of evading responsibility and abandoning the Afghan people and imposing political isolation and blockade. The website of Crescent International wrote, "The Afghan people's plight is so desperate that they are selling whatever little furniture or silverware they have for cash." According to a report compiled by the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, SIGAR, people are selling their kidneys. Some Afghan families are even forced to sell their daughters in order to have a few less mouth to feed and to provide a few more cells of food for their remaining children. Western do-gooders that are so anxious to get Afghan girls educated should perhaps stop starving them to death. Afghanistan's liquidity crisis is compounded by the fact that it has been effectively cut off from the global financial system. Further, there is not enough cash, whether in dollars or Afghanis, the local currency. The reason is that, unlike most other countries, Afghanistan doesn't print its own money. So even if people have money in the bank, they cannot access it. Commercial banks do not have cash. Let us consider what Western relief agencies and the UN have said about the situation in Afghanistan. More than 18 million Afghans are facing acute food insecurity, about half of the country's entire population, according to World Food Programme WFP. In March 2022, the United Nations said almost 95% of Afghans aren't getting enough to eat, what a UN official called a figure so high that it is almost inconceivable. Nearly 4 million children are acutely malnourished. According to the World Food Programme, 92% of households reported having debt. 88% said buying food forced them to borrow. In the midst of this U.S.-imposed humanitarian catastrophe, the Washington warlords have resumed drone strikes on Afghanistan. Their collaborators in the other countries' military are facilitating such criminal activity. Americans are fond of producing glossy reports extolling the virtues of their occupation. According to CIGAR, for 20 years, the U.S. set aside nearly $150 billion for Afghanistan reconstruction. During the same period, the U.S. spent an estimated $2.3 trillion on the war, according to Brown University's Cost of War project. What Biden and none of his predecessors will ever admit is that America's war on Afghanistan was a racket. It spawned a culture of corruption in which the Afghan collaborators siphoned off a few billion dollars while the bulk of $2.3 trillion was sucked back into the U.S. economy. The war merchants made a killing, literally and figuratively. This was the real purpose of the war, and it was a huge success.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
You're listening to Husseiniya from IRIB English Radio by Sayyid Abbas Razavian. لبیک یا حسین.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. السلام علیک یا ابا عبدالله. Peace and salutations upon you, Imam Hussein alayhi salam. I send my condolences for the martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam upon you, brothers and sisters, and I welcome you to the program Husseiniya. The Ashura of Imam Hussein has many lessons for us to learn. Ziyarat Ashura is a ziyarat that is a gift by Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam to us, and we learn that the bala of Imam Hussein is not only limited to him, it is also our bala. It is also our trial and tribulations. It is also our misfortune. When we look at Imam Hussein alayhi salam and we see how patient he was, how strong he was, that his patience even amazed the angels. And he was a mountain, and he gave patience to his followers. We learn that in life, we need to be able to deal with our own trials and tribulations. We learn that we need to be strong. And we said that if a person wants to reach happiness, happiness is what? Happiness is minimizing pain. Happiness is managing our misfortunes. Happiness is maximizing our joy, enjoying life, enjoying spirituality, enjoying religion. Therefore, the more we manage bala, the more we understand bala, the better we will enjoy our own life. And this is a great lesson in Ashura, inshallah. One of the methods that we talked about how to manage pain, how to face difficulties, we said we need to be aware that difficulty faces everybody. Two, that we have to have correct action, that we can have resolve, and that we have to have plans how to take care of our financial needs, how to take care of our emotional needs, how to take care of our family needs, how to live in society in a correct way. There are methods and skills that we learn. We need to learn that sometimes there are trials and tribulations that happen, and that we have to become very strong, and we need to have the strength to overcome them. And one of the ways, and maybe the best answer to how to manage our pains and how to manage such difficulties that all human beings face, is this answer, is that when we accept the fact that we are an abd, that we are a slave of God, that we are His servant, we understand that He is our Lord, that He has commands and He has plans for us, and that we truly understand that when we want us to be faced with hardship, that there is good in that hardship, that He is a loving Lord, He is a caring Lord, He is trying not to just torture us, He is trying to make us excel, He is trying to have us, our position be elevated. The commands of God, true, they have maslahat, they have good in them, they separate us from mafsada, from corruption and from bad. True, there's purpose and goal in the commands of God. But the fact that He commands and gives us orders and things to follow, and He gives us trials for us to overcome, this is so that He can make us a greater abd, make us more humble. When we become more humble, we become similar more to the prophets and to the imams. When we become more humble, we get closer to God. And that is the essence of spirituality. Look at Satan, for example. He worshipped God, but he was arrogant. But bala makes us humble. Many times, brothers and sisters, you faced difficult times in your lives probably, and your tears have shed, and your heart has been broken. Then when you cry and you claim that you love Allah, that you need help from Him, that is when you are the most sincere. That is when you are the most connected to God. Why? Because that is when you have realized ubudiyat. That is when you have become a slave of God. A humble slave that owes nothing, that owns nothing, that is completely faqir and that realizes he is ghani, that he has all the things that the creation needs and wants. And that's the essence of the trials and tribulations that follow us, that it makes us a greater abd.
Standing here alone on a land so far from home, a place where angels cry, while innocent children die. Hussein has said goodbye, praying some of them survive the torture and the heat. They can't bear to watch him leave. They cry out, Hussein.
Welcome back. We were talking about bala, and we're talking about misfortunes, trials, and difficulties that we face in our lives and how we can overcome them. We said that when a person realizes that there is a purpose to this bala, that is the essence of the solution of how to deal with our calamities. That we know there is purpose and we know there is reward. Imagine if a person lived life and he didn't believe in God. He didn't believe in a wise creator. He didn't believe in a commanding Lord. And that all these different factors from the beginning, you know, when you're a baby, from being hungry and thirsty and being in pain, until when you become an adult and you have your own different trials and tribulations. You see that life is filled with such great pain, but you don't know where that pain is coming from and what is the purpose of it. Imagine how deep in darkness a person would be and how confused they would be and how weak a person would be. But on the other side, we have believers that they believe in Allah and they believe that when God brings for them trials and misfortunes, there is a purpose to it. And that purpose is to bring him closer to himself, to bring us closer to God. Then that person becomes very actually joyful, even in the face of trials and tribulations. He becomes even grateful. He becomes so spiritual that he realizes that everything from God, either if we see it as good or if we see it as bad, all of it is good for us because he is taking us towards himself and is removing us from the nafs, the desires, the ego, the greatest barrier between us and God. He is shattering that. Once that's shattered, we connect to God. We become very easily connected to God. Imam Ali alayhi salam in Sermon 192 in Nahjul Balagha talks about this. Says, but Allah tries his servants with various ordeals and obligates them with various forms of struggle and tests them with various dreads. So there's struggle, there are dreads, there are ordeals, but there's a purpose why Imam Ali says this. He says there's a purpose. إِخْرَاجًا لِتَكَبُّرْ مِنْ قُلُوبِهِمْ to, in order to eradicate vanity from their hearts, takabur and arrogance, the same attribute of Satan, to take the Satan away from us, to make us humble. وَإِسْكَانًا لِتَذَلُّلْ فِي نُفُوسِهِمْ to take away vanity from their hearts and instill humility in their souls. And that this may open the doors to his favor and the feasible means to his forgiveness. Allah is making us instilling humility in us. Allah is taking away arrogance from us. And that is what the purpose of our life is, to be an abd. Don't we say in our salat, Ashhadu anna Muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluh, that I bear witness that Prophet Muhammad is his slave first and then is his messenger. Being a slave of God is the greatest quality of our Prophet. And that is how we reach him and connect to him. Not by arrogance, not by doing whatever our nafs wants, because our nafs is our greatest enemy. By actually taking away ourselves from the nafs and the lower desires into just submission. As the traditions say, religion Islam is huwa taslim. The religion of Islam is nothing but submission to God. And this submission itself brings us so much power, gives us so much strength, gives us such great favors, that a person that becomes a true slave, a true servant of God, becomes the most powerful person, becomes the most able to manage their pains and difficulties, because they see themselves as a student of Imam Hussein. They see themselves, when trials and tribulations happen, they see themselves as being tested, and they want to pass this test, just how Imam Hussein alayhi salam passed his test and even amazed the angels with his patience. We want to pass this test. So in this Muharram, that we are understanding bala, this great bala that happened on Imam Hussein alayhi salam, we reflect on our own lives, and we say that we want to be able to, just like our Imam, just like our master Imam Hussein, dealt with his pains, we want to become like him. How did he deal with his pain? The solution is he was an abd. He understood that this bala is for a purpose, and that purpose is to increase him more in ubudiyat, in being a slave of God, in being humble in God, and to take away everything else besides God in his heart. Inshallah, in this Muharram, we can learn to become a greater servant of God, a greater slave of God, and this is the key to dealing with trials and tribulations and difficulties in our life, inshallah.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and let us ponder on the words of wisdom from the Holy Prophet's elder grandson and second infallible heir, Imam Hassan Mujtaba, peace be upon him. Glory is to give in loss and forgive the sin, while chivalry is to safeguard the religion, promote the personality, be lenient, sustain in doing favours, fulfil the rights, and behave amicably with people.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
An Iranian movie wins the grand prize for the best film in this year's Moscow International Film Festival. In its international debut, No Prior Appointment won the Best Film and the Best Actress awards. The movie is a product of Farabi Cinema Foundation and directed by Behruz Shoaibi in Iran in 2021. It is the story of a girl named Yasaman who returns to Iran from Germany after her father's death. A short stay in her father's hometown and meeting those who know him leads her to a new understanding of humans and the concept of death. The 44th edition of the Moscow International Film Festival was held this year from September 4 to 11. Animals, no matter pets or wild, are more vulnerable to drowning or dying in resulting floods and mudslides. A veterinarian school in Pakistan is offering free treatment for animals injured in the recent devastating floods. The veterinary surgery department of Sindh Agriculture University has set up a makeshift animal hospital as flooding hit humans and animals alike in the surrounding area. Volunteers have been providing anything from surgery to medicine and even ultrasounds to the animals free of cost. People from flood-affected areas can be seen bringing their farm animals such as goats, donkeys, buffaloes, and cows to the center. The worst floods in history have killed an estimated 800,000 farm animals. But there were many heartwarming videos trolling on social media showing people come to rescue animals being stuck hopelessly.
Iran is famous for its hand-knotted carpets and ancient art which have been loved for centuries and are never going out of style despite changing tastes and increased competition from Asia. Striking geometric shapes that recall 20th century abstract art are what we expect to see in handmade Iranian rugs. But weavers and exporters have been forced to redesign a tradition dating back more than 2,000 years due to numerous problems. Carpet exporter Ahad Azimzadeh says, however, that a revolution is underway. Iranian rugs are known for dense, curving floral designs in rich colors. They were put on display in a recent exhibition that featured a rug with small squares of hypnotic diagonal blue and white lines and another depicting diamond and other patterns in gold silk. Some countries have overtaken Iran in the global market, but many say modern carpets will never replace the traditional ones which are deep-rooted in Iranian culture. These days, computer technology is impacting every aspect of our life, providing a greater ability to place things, events and people within context. An Iraqi museum has started using the technology and virtual reality headsets to make exhibits interactive and to bring scenes back to life. Visitors can explore heritage sites destroyed by terrorist groups. Now using thousands of photographs, a group of local engineers have given a virtual rebirth to five historic sites in Mosul and the broader Nineveh province. That includes a mosque and its leaning minaret. But this museum brings sites back to life for the people who live in Mosul. Although large parts of the old city remain oceans of debris, authorities are trying to restore historic sites, mosques and churches in Mosul. A private museum along the Tigris River, which opened in mid-June, saw more than 4,000 visitors in its first month. The floating cinema of unknown waters is back in the Italian city of Venice, and spectators are getting buoyant to reach the annual Open Sea Film Festival. On board rowing boats, motorboats, gondolas and whatever capable of floating, spectators sail to the shallows behind the Giudecca Island for this one-of-a-kind cinematic experience. The audience can watch the program from their own boat or a barge with chairs for those without floating transportation. The event consists of a series of screenings, performances and presentations on a floating platform and is held for 12 nights in the Venetian Lagoon.
A new bird species has been discovered on the southernmost islands of the Americas. Biologists are baffled.
Discovering new bird species is very, very difficult and rare because the world has been more focused on observing birds. Therefore, this means the discovery site is unique in the sub-Antarctic zone, on which Chile has important sovereignty. This raises the importance of caring for the environment and unique ecosystems, as these sites will allow us to carry out research on climate change, new species and behaviors.
The tiny bird weighs only 16 grams and has a large beak with black and yellow streaks along its body. Researchers say the animal is a subcategory of a species typically found in the Patagonia forest and inhabits tree trunks. But the newly discovered cousin has surprised scientists as it learned to burrow and live in a harsh tundra climate with bitter temperatures. The Diego Ramirez archipelago, where the bird was found, is an isolated bit of land. It also lacks mammalian predators and woody plants. Biologists and researchers from Chilean universities and various academic centers studied the birds for 6 years before announcing the new species.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The next moonshot is finally getting closer. NASA says it's ready to test its next-generation rocket ship on an epic launch set for August the 29th as part of its mission to send people to the moon.
This new deep space exploration system is going to take us back to the moon and to new science discoveries that we can't even imagine yet. NASA is about to make history with this first flight of the Artemis program.
The mega rocket combines the Space Launch System, or SLS, and the Orion crew capsule it will carry to space. The rocket is due to blast off for a test drive from the U.S. base Kennedy Space Center, sending an empty crew capsule around the moon and back to the Earth. The Artemis 1 test flight is planned to take 6 weeks. It's meant to rigorously stress the systems to determine whether the vehicle is ready to safely carry astronauts. The program aims to establish a long-term lunar colony as a stepping stone to the even more ambitious future voyages that will send people to Mars. The SLS represents the biggest new vertical launch system NASA has built since those flown in the 1960s and 70s. This story will tell you about what could be the bright side of climate change, and that's the discovery of dinosaur tracks dating back to 113 million years ago. The tracks were found in the U.S. state of Texas, where drought has dried up parts of Paluxy River. Experts say the tracks belong to a two-legged dinosaur with small arms and weighing 7 tons. They say dinosaurs made the prints as they roamed muddy areas over 100 million years ago. The prints were then covered over with sediment due to a flood. And after that, they turned into limestone, protecting the prints. The experts say the tracks have not been seen either before or in decades. Age does not matter, it's the heart that counts. A Guatemalan female footballer has proved that there is no point one should worry about the age. 57-year-old Alma Salazar has a passion for soccer and takes care of her team's goalpost. Known as Flying Granny, she launches herself and deflects a ball that's looking for the nets. The passion for the sport was born when she was 19 years old. She started training with a men's team where she often found a place as a goalkeeper. Since then, Alma has played for several professional and amateur football clubs. In her room that overlooks a local stadium, Alma keeps trophies she has won on a table, most of them as the least defeated goalkeeper. Locals praise her as an unbeatable goalkeeper. The evolution of robots has been one of the fascinations of recent technological developments. And now the most cutting-edge achievements in that department were presented to the public during a conference in Beijing. The 4-day annual World Robot Conference was held both offline and online. It featured 3 major events, including forum, expo, and competition. On display were more than 500 sets of robots from 130 companies from China and abroad. The conference gave an idea of how the future of humanity will be impacted by the automations. It shows how they can contribute to different sectors, from the restaurant industry and medicine to elderly care, agriculture, and manufacturing. An inflatable building that explores how people would potentially live on Mars has been unveiled in the British city of Bristol. It's a 2-story structure with an area of 570 square feet, powered by solar panels. It's designed to cope with temperatures as low as minus 63 degrees Celsius. Although the Martian house will be displayed above ground, its lower level will be fully buried to maximize protection against the harsh environment on Mars. Inside, the top floor features a hydroponic living room filled with decorative plants that feed into a circular wastewater system. A team of experts helped develop the design, taking into consideration the complexity of transporting materials to the Red Planet and what is already there.
So in the gold inflatable structure, which you see above you, that's the main living space of the Martian house. It's gold to reflect dangerous solar rays and cosmic radiation, and it's inflatable because it would be filled with a special concrete made of the dust and water that you find on Mars, again to protect you from those dangerous solar and cosmic rays.
The Martian house was envisioned by local artists 7 years ago. The artists also brought together space scientists, architects, engineers, designers, and even school children. The space age dwelling explores what a house on Mars could be like and is meant to for research and experiments about the future. The major objective of the project, however, is to provoke questions about living more sustainably with the resources at hand here on Earth.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Almighty Allah. Dear brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, dear listeners of today's special from IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum and welcome. We're talking about the concept of sacrifice in the view of Islam. I invite you to listen to us. حول الرمال تلفني بل من ورائي واللحد يحكي ظلمة فيها ابتلائي والنور خط كتابه أنسي لقائي. Today, Monday, is the 8th of Safar, 1444 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 14th of Shahrivar, 1401 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 5th of September, 2022, of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Surah As-Saffat, verse 102, we choose for blessing this moment of today's special.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم فلما بلغ معه السعي قال يا بني إني أرى في المنام أني أذبحك فانظر ماذا ترى قال يا أبت افعل ما تؤمر ستجدني إن شاء الله من الصابرين.
And when he reached with him the age of exertion, he said, O my son, indeed I have seen in a dream that I must sacrifice you. So see what you think. He said, O my father, do as you are commanded. You will find me, if Allah wills, of the steadfast.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
From one side, the father suggests the subject of sacrifice to his 13-year-old son and asks his view about it. He considers independent personality and freedom of decisions for him because he does never intend to deceive his son and blindly invites him to this great field of trial. He wishes that the son may also participate in this excellent struggle willingly and, like the father, tests the pleasure of submission and contentment. On the other side, the son intends that the father would be firm in his decision and he submits to his commandment. And on the third side, he keeps the state of courtesy at the presence of Allah in the best form. There was the story of sacrifice by Prophet Ibrahim and his son Ismail.
Allah, Allah.
at Islam and sacrifice. Islam simply means surrender to Allah of your whole being, not of just some possession. Put in the language of our present discourse, Islamic lifestyle. Islamic life is a life of sacrifice par excellence. It entails a struggle that must be ceaselessly waged to actualize Islam inwardly and outwardly to make it a living reality. Sacrifice is the nourishment without which the tiny seeds of faith will not grow into mighty leafy trees providing shade and fruit to the countless caravans of mankind. It must be the constant companion without which the path of jihad cannot be traversed, for across it stretches endless deserts and high mountains. It is one of those keys without which the closed doors do not unlock.
Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa binastain. In this episode, we are going to be concerned with the sacrifice and its role in people's lifestyle. Now we find that the role of being sacrificial or having a personality in order to give sacrifice to other people is very much highlighted in Islamic teachings. For example, you find that a teacher who goes to a class and starts teaching and spends his time and not on anything else but on giving lessons to those people or to those students who may need those types of materials or instructions or indications, it can be regarded as a kind of sacrifice, because this teacher might be able not to spend his time in class, rather to spend his time elsewhere in order to earn more money. Yet he prefers to come to a class and to teach. In this connection, it's indicated that there are some indications, or there are some background features or background scenario wherein sacrifice makes sense. One of them is the context or the space. Now we find that the context or the space wherein a person is educated plays a key role in inviting the person, the individual, how to treat other people, whether to treat other people in a mercenary way or to treat other people out of respect and being ready to sacrifice some things for them.
IRIB English Radio presents today's special, Every Day for 15 Minutes.
Be like the sun shining with light, be like a rose spreading its fragrance in every palm.
Today's special.
Be like the earth, humble and wise. Be like the rain, pouring all your love to every soul.
This is today's special from IRIB English Radio. Now we look at things to sacrifice for the sake of Allah. And today's suggestion is bad character. It's a good case for sacrificing. The things like arguing and lying are both part of bad character, along with other bad traits, such as cheating, treating people with contempt, and being unlike to poor people and orphans. Leaving behind these vices and making the intention to purify our hearts and consequently our actions is an act of worship that is greatly rewarded by Allah. When we make the intention to purify our character for the sake of Allah, we are essentially choosing the hardship of self-rectification over the comfort of remaining in old, unhealthy patterns of behavior. It is easy to be selfish. It is difficult to be generous. It is easy to cheat someone. It is more difficult to make an honest living. That is what makes it a sacrifice. And in return for the sacrifice, we get a house in the highest part of paradise.
Inshallah.
We are in the month of Safar. Now it's nice to look at an unforgettable sacrifice for Islam in Karbala. As the mission statement indicates, the instruments that the Imam, Imam al-Hussein, peace be upon him, planned to use to bring about the transformation of the society were those of to enjoying good and forbid evil. Now these injunctions are typically applied at the individual level. However, given that the very foundation of Muslim society had been seriously undermined, there was a dire necessity to apply these injunctions at the societal level. As a logical corollary, while the individual application of the injunction is done in private to protect the dignity of a Muslim whose actions one wishes to rectify, the societal application has to be done in the pen to draw the attention of a whole community to the actions that one would like to stop. Muslims everywhere would then be inclined to implement fundamental Islamic obligations of enjoining good and forbidding evil. If these obligations are carried out in a concerted and coordinated manner by protecting against and refusing to abide by alterations in religious ideology and practices, the society can reform itself and once again become followers of true Muslims.
Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam was a role model. And a role model, a true role model, has to be exemplary at all times, even in those desperate conditions. And Imam al-Hussein still had to have that high level of morality, because he knew that the story of Ashura will be mentioned for thousands of years on the manabar, on the pulpits. And because he knew that this will be one of the greatest inspiring lessons of all time. And that's why Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, you see, never did he go down. Never did he go low. He kept the same standards towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and towards Ahlul Bayt. Because to him it didn't matter if he passed, if he prevailed against Yazid or not. Who cares? I'll die, I'll go to Rasulullah, to the heavens, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will hold my enemies accountable. What matters is only one thing, that I succeed with Allah azza wa jal. That I leave a legacy, a noble legacy. A legacy filled with morality, and a legacy that other people can emulate after. That's all he cared about. That's why Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam on the day of Ashura, yes, maybe physically we think he lost, but he prevailed against Yazid. Because he's the one that left that beautiful legacy after him, that we try to follow in his footsteps. So Imam al-Hussein didn't lose. In fact, he won. He prevailed against his enemies. That's why we always say the incident of Karbala is a true example of where the blood prevailed against the sword. Correct? The blood prevailed against the sword. Maybe physically Abu Abdullah was killed. But 1400 years later, are we mentioning Yazid or are we mentioning Imam al-Hussein?
Dear friend, inshallah, we continue our discussion on the next episode of today's special. Until then, wassalamu alaikum.
اللهم اجعل محياي محيا محمد وآل محمد ومماتي ممات محمد وآل محمد.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.